Jatta, and I'm here to talk to you today on the topic of Buddhism in the time of COVID. And as we all know, the world is gripped in an unprecedented pandemic. So much suffering, so much death, so much disruption to everybody's lives. And what we're seeing today, we've never seen before. No one has ever seen anything like this before. The governments of the world have swung into action to try to keep their population safe, and people around the world are pursuing different strategies for remaining isolated, for keeping social distance, for washing their hands. And I would strongly encourage all of you to take a great deal of care and attention to what your local authorities are telling you, especially what the local medical authorities are telling you, and to make sure that you follow their guidelines as best you possibly can. The ones who are bearing the brunt of this, of course, are all the medical workers, and the doctors, the nurses, the staff, and every day they're risking their lives for caring for patients, caring for people who are sick or people who may be sick. And so it's really critical that we all do our bit, at the very least, to try to make their job no more dangerous than it needs to be. Now, if I was to ask what is a specifically Buddhist response to this, then of course there are many different angles that we can take. But for my part, for this little talk, I'm going to look at the three characteristics, what we call the three characteristics in Buddhism: anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, suffering, and not self. Now, these three characteristics are often taught as part of meditation, as part of especially Vipassana meditation, where we learn to observe the phenomena in our experience, our thoughts, our feelings, our perceptions, our memories, and to see that all of these are not there, and then they are, and then they pass away again. And this we call impermanence. We see that these things, much as we would like them to bring us happiness, in fact, they bring us pain and stress. This we call dukkha. And we see that even our own thoughts, even our own mind, is not under our control. That somehow everything seems to be operating in a way that's independent of our will or of our intention. And this we call anatta, or not self. As well as being something that's observed in meditation, these three characteristics can be seen in the world around us. And we can see these three characteristics manifesting very strongly in this time of pandemic. Now, one of the things that we can learn from this is that wisdom is how we respond to these three characteristics. Wisdom is understanding that these three characteristics are real and that they are everywhere, in everything. Everything we've ever seen, heard, smelled, tasted, touched, or thought, all of it is subject to these three characteristics. So how do we respond when these things happen? This is the test. This is the test of our wisdom. Now, even as meditators, it is unfortunately quite easy for us to be able to practice a meditation technique, to to be able to see rise and fall, and to be able to look at these things and to think that we have some degree of insight and some degree of wisdom. But it's quite one, there's one thing to see a thought disappear and to know, ah, that thought is impermanent. And quite another thing to see a family member pass away. Quite another thing to see a whole society put on lockdown. Quite another thing to see the whole world change in ways that we could never have foreseen. We can't expect that there is some magical force that takes that insight we learnt in meditation and suddenly makes it work everywhere else. That's not how the mind works. The mind compartmentalizes things. If we want to apply these three characteristics to what's happening in the pandemic, we have to actually do the work. Now what we see when we do that, we can ask the question, well, how are people responding in terms of these three characteristics? You can see that there are very, very different kinds of responses. Take anicca, for example. First thing, a lot of people, when it comes to this pandemic, are very much in denial. Very much, nothing's happening, nothing's really changed. It's just like the flu, they'll say. People are dying all the time, they'll say. We have to be wary of changing things too much. Think of the economy. Who cares about the people dying in the hospital? We're not going to change what we do because that's what matters. And so this is the voice of foolishness, the voice of the lack of wisdom. Well, one of the things which is really striking about this period of time that we're going through is that things have changed so much, so fast. How do we respond to that? How do we accept that radical degree of change? Now, I will admit that as a monk, this is probably easier for me than it is for most people. My life hasn't changed all that much. I'm doing this presentation to you from in our little vihara in Harris Park in Sydney. Normally I'd be going to a venue to do this. I had to learn how to set up the camera and the microphone and to make all of this work. So there's some change there, but it's not a huge deal. But for many people, their lives have radically changed. People have been hit by unemployment. People have been hit by not being able to pay their bills. People have been hit by suddenly having to find out how to work from home. People are hit by the collapse of essential services. And this is especially hitting those people who are already vulnerable. And so any change for those, I think of the homeless people, I think of asylum seekers, I think of the poor, I think of the desperate people who are fleeing the cities in India. And I know that whatever minor deprivations that I've had to suffer, it's much worse for them. So change, impermanence, affects different people in different ways. But one thing that we can say is that if you underestimate it, it's going to come back and bite you. Impermanence will always have the last word. And if you think that things are going to remain the same, then you're suffering from a delusion. Nietzsche vipalasa, the delusion, the perversion that thinks that things are permanent. So this is one of the tests of wisdom that we've seen. Are people able to see this change, to adapt to it, to recognize it for what it is, and to do what needs to be done in the face of that change? Or are people clinging on to a world that's past, stuck in the language and the philosophies and the values of days that simply don't exist anymore. And both in our private lives and in public policy, we can see these things happening. And we can recognize that where our governments try to cover up the extent of the pandemic, when institutions or companies try to cover it up, when public figures come out and say there's no need to do too much, that there's no need to do these things, or if we see world leaders saying, well, yes, the advice is to wear a face mask, but I'm probably not going to do it, then we see these are fools. These are people who don't understand the true meaning of impermanence. And the reason that they do, well, one of the reasons that they don't understand that is because their wealth and their power and their position has enabled them to be insulated from the effects of impermanence, at least to some degree. So this is what power means, and power and wealth means is the ability to outsource impermanence, dukkha and anatta, to other people, to the powerless. So for the wealthy and the privileged, and I'll be frank, I count myself among those. I don't have much. I have very few possessions. But I have all the things that I want. I have all the things that I need. And I haven't gone hungry in a very long time. So, and I've got a roof over my head. So I count myself among the wealthy, among the privileged. So for those of us who are wealthy and privileged, our lives will change to some degree. Some of the things we expected to do, we won't be able to do. But impermanence will really bite down on those who are already suffering. And to recognize this is to show wisdom and to show compassion. Now, which leads us on to the second of the three characteristics, is the characteristic of dukkha. Suffering. Suffering is a terrible thing. And the Buddha talked about the suffering that we experience in samsara as being a terrible thing, like a mountain of suffering, like the tears that you've shed in all of this transmigration is greater than the water in the oceans of all the world. In our modern times, it's become fashionable to say that suffering is like too much. Instead, we call dukkha unsatisfactoriness or stress or something like that. We try to cool it down. And this is just the Buddhism of privilege talking. This is the interpretations of the people who themselves have, through their privilege, managed to insulate themselves against dukkha and the people around them, and they don't really take on board what it is the Buddha was talking about. We look at the Mahadukkha Kanda Sutta, and the Buddha's talking about the tortures that people undergo, the suffering of people in wartime, the suffering of people in plagues and pandemics and so on. It's suffering. It's terrible. The suffering that's going on today under the pandemic is terrible. As I speak now, roughly, I haven't checked the figures the last day, but roughly about 6,000 people per day are perishing. And each one of those people goes through terrible suffering. Each one of them has family and friends that go through terrible suffering. And through the whole systems, it all reverberates, it ripples out, echoes out the suffering that these people are going through. So we shouldn't be trying to insulate ourselves from suffering or to hide the extent and the depth and the reality of suffering. Nor should we try to explain it away and try to pretend that what the Buddha meant was just worrying about these things. It's purely just an existential suffering that the Buddha was talking about. Sure, of course, psychological suffering, emotional suffering, existential suffering are part, they're included within what the Buddha called dukkha. But dukkha itself includes all of these very strong forms of suffering that we experience as part of the human realm. It's dukkha. And in this pandemic, we come face to face with dukkha, and we come face to face with the realization that the kinds of suffering or the kinds of dukkha that we can insulate ourselves from, we can proceed in our lives in a fairly happy way. If we have enough money, we have a nice place to live, we have the society to support us, and we can have this delusion that we are somehow responsible for that. This massive delusion that people have these days, that through their hard work and their efforts, they get to enjoy the fruits of those things. I mean, it's absurd. As if millions of peasants in poor countries for thousands of years of human history haven't worked so much harder than they have. And what is their reward? A little hovel with a straw roof and a bowl of lentil soup at the end of the day, if they're lucky. There's no reason why we should have all of this. All of the technology, all of the nice houses and the buildings, the flights to fly anywhere that we want to, all of the things, the delicious food that we get to enjoy every day. There's no reason that we have a right to or deserve any of these things. We only have these things because we have borrowed them from the future. Or should I say, we have stolen them from the future. And we've stolen them from the future through our use of energy, through our use of resources, through our use of debt, all of which the future will have to pay. That means our children will have to pay through climate change and through the other kinds of change that's rippling throughout our world. And this, again, is one of the meanings of dukkha. We can't escape dukkha. We try to insulate ourselves, but the more extreme the means that we use to insulate ourselves from dukkha, then the more we build up this tension and these walls to try to keep our little kingdom safe, and that means the greater the collapse when it does collapse. And of course, this is what we're seeing around us right now. And in my country, in Australia, as in many of the countries, in my whole life as an adult, we've seen the triumph of what we call neoliberal philosophies, and these neoliberal philosophies essentially based on the idea that we can sell off the state, give away the utilities, the services, all of the things, the goods that the state would normally provide, and we can put them into the hands of private enterprise and use them to make profit. And what that has resulted in was extreme inequality and the erosion of the ability of the state to respond to these things. So let's not forget that what we see around us, the responses, the ability of people to deal with these things, it has a cause. It doesn't just happen. It doesn't just magically happen that certain countries can respond efficiently and effectively with open and transparent governance, and that others will rather spectacularly fail that test. This is because of the history of how people have organized themselves and how they've run their society. And one of the promises of an open society and an honest society and a society with integrity is that we all share each other's suffering. That your dukkha is our dukkha. That if somebody gets sick, that we will take care of them. That if somebody has a need, that we will help. And this is the promise of a sane and compassionate society.